Hi, welcome to another edition of the PCRF Podcasts. My name is Dave Page, and I'm here with...
Josh Salzman, Director of the Critical Care Research Center at Regents Hospital in St. Paul.
Marshall Washick, paramedic with Health East Medical Transportation in St. Paul.
And Dr. Keith Wesley, I'm the medical director here at Health East Medical Transportation in St. Paul.
And we are going to discuss a paper. It's a pharmacological study. It appeared in the Journal of Emergency Medicine, just March 2011 here, from Dr. Barrett and company, a randomized placebo-controlled trial of ondansetron, I'm going to butcher this name, metoclopramide, and promethazine in adults. So that what this group did is that this is a prospective double-blinded study, so not the caregivers and the patients didn't know what they were giving, but they randomized the type of drug that was being given. They took a sample of convenience, meaning patients that came into the emergency department with some nausea and vomiting, and gave them one of three, or actually four, possible interventions. A placebo, which was just saline, either and one of the three drugs. All of them had nausea, and they used a visual analog scale to have the patient report if they were feeling better or not. So they enrolled, they were looking to enroll about 600 patients and fell short of that, and this study was actually stopped short of its full length, and we'll be discussing that in a minute. But what they discovered was out of 180 subjects that they had, only 163 really could be part of the study, and they really found no difference. That was the main headline of this paper, that in fact you could probably get saline instead of ondansetron or any number of the other studies and or other medications, and you'd be just as well off in terms of your nausea. This was surprising to me, and I'll open it up for comments from everybody else.
Well, I think from a methodology perspective, they had a good, positive, ambitious goal from the start in the actual design of the study to get the 600 patients that they were hoping for. Really did put a lot of thought and effort into that. But I think this paper really calls attention to when you're short enrollment goals and you're basing studies basing your enrollment goal on a predefined metric of finding a difference, that you really do end up underpowering the analysis, and that it can really lead to, like this study shows, that there wasn't any difference between those four study interventions, one of which was placebo. But I do commend them for taking the time and effort to think through good study design initially, and it's unfortunate that it didn't get to the end and get the 600 patients that they needed.
I especially like that they went out of their way to blind everybody. Mm-hmm. They went to great lengths so that when you ordered the study drug, it came up from the pharmacy in a tube that was non-identifiable. It looks like they even changed the dose of one of the medications so that promethazine wouldn't burn in the vein, and then patients couldn't identify or tell the caregiver what they had had and how it felt. So they did go out of their way to try and make this as double-blinded as you could possibly be. And the number of patients that got the rescue drug, meaning that the physicians had the opportunity to sort of intervene and say, boy, we really need to give this patient something we know will work, was very low comparatively. So I didn't see that many patients that got their rescue medication.
Well, let's talk about a couple of those things. One is the choice that they made for the doses of the medications. So for ondansetron, that's the one I butcher, which is Zofran, they chose 4 milligrams, which is a relatively low dose for most patients, at least in the emergency situation, was acute severe nausea and vomiting. Mm-hmm. 10 milligrams.
So you're used to the 8 milligram dose.
Right.
Okay.
We'd use 8. Very common to use 8. We've been using 4 as our standard, and I would say 50 to 75% of our pre-hospital providers have to redose and give a second dose. So we're just going to go move our protocol to 8 right off the bat.
Fascinating. Good. Okay.
But now again, maybe the severity of nausea in pre-hospital. This was an emergency department study.
Good.
And so maybe the severity of nausea, because even if you look at the visual analog score of the nausea patients in this study, they all averaged out starting at they were on a visual analog scale of 100, and they were all around about 60. So on a 0 to 10 scale, there are 6. Well, most of the patients that we transport pre-hospital would rate their nausea at 8 or 10, because otherwise they wouldn't have called us if they were just slightly upset their stomach. And that's another issue. So one is that, so that dose of 4 milligrams of Zofran, then 10 milligrams of Reglan, again a relatively small dose, and then the Phenergan of 12.5 milligrams. Again, a relatively small dose. Most would give 25 milligrams IV. And then comparing this as against placebo. So they looked at the and decision point of 30 minutes after the administration of the agent to determine what their reduction in nausea was. Well, the big issue, like Josh brought up, was that they didn't get the number of patients that they needed to truly show with a 95% certainty that there was a significant difference. This is more at an 80% level of certainty by having this lower numbers. Well, then let's look at those questions. If they broke down the four groups of saline, Reglan, Zofran, and Phenergan, then you would expect that the characteristics of those four groups, if it was double-blind randomized, should have been about the same. But yet, when you look at the incidence of diabetes in those patients that were given the 4 milligrams of Zofran, 29% of them had diabetes compared to 14 or 15% for the other. Well, diabetic gastritis, nausea and vomiting, at least in my experience clinically, is significantly worse with patients with diabetes. So to find that it was no better than, at least it was certainly no worse than the other agents, but it wasn't better either. But it also wasn't the therapeutic dose that I would give a diabetic gastritis. I would immediately start with 8 milligrams. And then finally, when you brought the issue of those that needed rescue second doses, actually, those patients that got Reglan, only 22% of them required a second dose of anything, compared to about 40% for all the other ones. So actually about half as likely if you got Reglan to need a rescue dose. So, the thing is, because of the low numbers, because of being underpowered, I'm not sure that we can draw any clinical conclusions from this that would change our care. I think that it's unfortunate that they came out with low numbers. But we understand the pressure to publish, and sometimes you publish what you got. And I think the authors were very honest in their discussion of limitations about equivalent dosing and low numbers, and that maybe this doesn't equate across the board, particularly when you look at the distribution that this was really a randomized controlled trial in nauseated females, because 70% of the patient population, this was not a 50-50, 70% of the patients were female. So did that sway the effect? And then you can't remove the Hawthorne effect from this at all, when even the patients who got saline believe they were getting a 3 out of 4 chance of getting an active drug. Well, if I started IV a saline on you, give you 500 cc's of fluid and say, all right, I'm going to give you an injection now, and it's a 3 out of 4 chance it's an active drug, I think that am I surprised that 80% of them felt better? No, that's just Hawthorne effect.
I think one other thing that's important to note, too, is that, and they were upfront in terms of their screening, that they did have about 430 patients that they looked to enroll, and only about half of them met their initial inclusion criteria. So it would be also helpful to know how many of those, what those inclusion criteria really were, and if they're bumping patients out who really could have been included if you were to look at it, or how well controlled they were trying to get their sample, which is a good study metric, but also important as a reader to make sure you take a look at.
Yeah, and for the readers, that's what we call selection bias. Mm-hmm. When you have too stringent of inclusion criteria, and yet you look at that and go, well, are they excluded because it's just too difficult to monitor them, or are they excluded because the therapy would be clinically contraindicated? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's probably more likely in this case the second, since it was a double-blind randomized controlled trial. You have to be very selective of the patients to ensure that they don't have any potential contraindications to any of the three agents.
Right.
And so that's going to require you to have a much more stringent exclusion and inclusion criteria.
Sure. Marshall, what do you think about the application for just EMS providers in general? It seems like these drugs are fairly well used across the country. And is there really a big concern about which one to use and which one to not use?
Boy,
And you don't just have to answer that question. Anyone can jump in.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I've been using Zofran for years now, and I like it, and it seems to work for me. Sometimes it's, hit or miss, but, that can be with any drug, I suppose. So,
Dave, what about you? Clinically, are you...
Well, it was interesting to me. I kind of wondered if there was a price difference between all of them,
sure.
Which it there actually might not be. So then I thought, why worry about it? Zofran seems to be working pretty well, and promethazine does have some issues with it. So I worry about dystonic reactions, and so I thought, well, maybe this is interesting. Maybe we'll find out that there was one or another. What I was most surprised about is that their conclusion here that saline, that hydrating patients might just change their nausea. And that is a portion that I thought needs to be explored, because I do think that hydration does affect people's sense of balance and well-being, and even just because all of this is really the visual analog scale. It ends up being very subjective, so you don't have like a measurement. Even it's not even as easy as pain. It's more... well, overall, how do you feel? So you got to wonder if some of this is altered by, in fact, other symptoms like pain, like vertigo, like other, you're giving people other medications because of whatever illness they had. So do those medications cause you to then have symptoms of nausea and vomiting? And if you got morphine, well, were you more or less likely? So a lot of those variables just muck up this data, and then I think you end up with not a very useful conclusion. But I did take away from it a thought of, fluids. If somebody's sick, they maybe could get a bolus of saline, and that just might be okay.
Yep.
And thanks for tuning in to another edition of these PCRF podcasts.